like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to
move it.
I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to
move it.
It's just shy of 9 o'clock at 88.9 FM KUCI. Good morning, animal lovers. For the next hour of programming here on KUCI, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. It's time now for Talking Animals on KUCI.
September, Isle of Man. Sultry sea, more sultry than I. It made one think of tawny paws, an aspen trembling, tomorrow's the road light. And a Luna Bank head, and Canada Lee, somewhere far off, peaceful, sleeping and done with acting. The dire wolves left Newfoundland's paw, close to nowhere, halfway across. Nevermore.
That's music from the, sorry, we just have a slight technical thing we're trying to deal with the best we can. From the Tragically Hip with a song called The Dire Wolf as we slide into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, and streaming live on the internet, KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise, the whole shebang, the whole enchilada, is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number and call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love to get calls here at Talking Animals. Other ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com and checking out our website at talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net, folks. Also, before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for, to paraphrase her, paraphrasing me, another rousing rendition of the Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. And we aim for a pretty reasonable balance of those elements you can readily glean by visiting our nifty website, again, talkinganimals.net, where nearly every show we broadcast is archived. We're a little behind. We've hit a little snag in the operation, but the rest of those hopefully will be loaded up, uploaded, or any variation of that phrase, very soon. But clearly, the heart of the program is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. And today, our guest is Mathilde DeCagney, a Hollywood animal trainer whose animals include the Jack Russell Terriers, who played Eddie on the Emmy-winning sitcom Frasier that, of course, just completed its 11-year run. And also in the films My Dog Skip, among many other animals and or TV film projects. And perhaps of equal note and interest to us is that virtually all her critters are rescue animals. So we'll find out about the father-son canines who played Eddie, the distinct challenges and rewards of working with Jack Russell Terriers, and other aspects of working with animals for TV and film when Mathilde DeCagney joined us in just a few moments here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. And I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals, not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss, announcements, observations, and, of course, any stories you might have spotted that all be most welcome here. The number, of course, is 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So turning now to... interesting or important developments recently in animal news. Typically, these are local, regional, national, or sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight and with any luck to get your comments on and discuss. We also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, that said, let's wait for it. Talk turkey, as it were. So from the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department, let's dive right in to a story that's so fresh and yet so, again, disturbing because it involves Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter. Crocodile hunter is in hot water again. We already heard that phrase a few times, but I think apt in this case. This time for allegedly swimming with two whales in the ocean off Antarctica and getting too close to penguins and seals. Australian environmental authorities were investigating the allegations that he breached regulations governing how close people can get to wildlife in the Antarctic. But the exuberant Australian entertainer, best known for wrestling crocodiles on his popular television show, denied any wrongdoing, saying it had only climbed onto an iceberg after his dry suit ripped while his company was filming the whales. Quote, my dry suit had ripped, so it was leaking water, and here's this iceberg, a little iceberg. So I grabbed hold of the iceberg, and I'm sitting on the iceberg while these whales are just all over us, he added. I guess he just couldn't work the word iceberg into that sense any additional times. Irwin called media reports of his latest run-in with authorities, quote, just a big storm in a teacup. Parliamentary Environment Secretary Sharman Stone confirmed Irwin's company was granted approval to film whales, but Stone said the permit would not have allowed Irwin to jump in and pat the animals. The probe followed an uproar earlier this year when Irwin was shown on television feeding a large crocodile at his Australia Zoo in Queensland while holding his baby son. Irwin, the TV host of the Crocodile Hunter Wildlife Program, stunned onlookers by carrying his son Bob, then only a month old, into a crocodile pen during a show in January. He tucked the infant under one arm while tossing the 13-foot reptile a piece of meat with the other.
Huh?
Parent of the year, maybe? I don't know. Possibly. All the returns aren't in yet. Okay, on a happier, more encouraging note, we've talked often on the show, of course, about Tiger Rescue, the so-called sanctuary that's was housing all kinds of tigers and big cats for a number of years, and as it turns out there was wild neglect of the facility, wilder neglect of the tigers and other animals there and at the proprietor's home as well. So we won't get into a whole review of that, but the good news is there's still 39 tigers left, having many of the other animals having been relocated to various legitimate sanctuaries in the last year since this all kind of got ugly and unfolded. So the first eight of those 39 started their trek to R2000, the amazing 2,300 sanctuary acre sanctuary up in Northern California that we've also talked about. And we just had Pat Derby, of course, on from Paws, who runs that sanctuary. So there's kind of a cool little piece, actually, in Friday's LA Times that had a couple neat pictures of many, many people maneuvering just one tiger into the cage that's going to be used to transport them. But they're sort of moving them basically in pods of based on, you know, how they get together and groups that can actually live together and some that need to be kind of isolated. So anyways, there's still 31 more to go, obviously, but really, really cool. And I've already kind of heard that the ones that are up there have settled in and seem to already be having a ball with their 10-acre habitat. So that's more like it, is it not? And on a related note, very much, that operation, the year-long plus now at the Tiger Sanctuary, when Chuck Tracy and his crew of volunteers have been running the day-to-day operation of the remaining cats and other animals there, cost, you know, obviously no small penny. And the Fund for Animals is the organization that's really been looking after that and absorbing the cost for that. And they worked out a deal with Paws to take the cats. But this, not coincidentally, slides right into an item I mentioned last week as well. But it's kind of a cool and easy way to support the Fund for Animals and all the work that they do, not just tiger rescue stuff, but many, many things across the country. And that is by joining iGive.com. And you can make your sort of everyday online shopping count for them as well. So each time you give an iGive.com member who has, each time they make a purchase, it can be designated for the Fund for Animals as their favorite cause, and then they get a percentage of the purchase price, the fund does. So, and until July 31st, in addition, the Fund for Animals will receive a $5 donation for every supporter who joins iGive.com and makes a purchase within 45 days. And there's all kinds of stuff there. I mean, it's books, CDs, fashion, electronics, toys, healthcare products, office supplies, all kinds of other stuff. So, a cool way to make your purchases and support various cool causes, including, in this case, the Fund for Animals. Now, brace yourself. This story is unsettling. Even if you're, I don't see how we could not incorporate that into this week's animal news. So, but let's get right into the headline, because that's where it looks a bit rough from the get-go. The headline is, Man Who Beheaded His Dog Is Ruled Sane. It's from the LA Times on Thursday as well. Orange County judge declared Wednesday that a La Habra man was sane when he beheaded his German Shepherd, making the third striker eligible for a life term in prison. Two psychiatrists, along with the man's father, testified during a three-day sanity hearing to determine if James Andrew Abernathy, 42, was insane when he killed the dog he had named after his girlfriend. Abernathy will be sentenced July 23rd in the Santa Ana courtroom of Orange County Superior Court Judge Kazuharu Makino. Friday, the judge found Abernathy guilty of animal cruelty. Prosecutor Heather Brown said Abernathy became enraged in January 2002. After his girlfriend broke up with him, so he beat his dog with a golf club, shoved a stake through his heart, and then decapitated it. Quote, he was drunk and angry, but he wasn't insane, Brown said Friday. He knew what he was doing, and he knew that it was wrong. Okay, I think that's enough. But, jeez, I mean, all right. If you got any comments on that, 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI, or anything else, perhaps the more upbeat Tiger Rescue story or anything else that might be on your mind. And one other story before we go to our mid-news quick quiz. And that's about this possible threat of a cougar at Griffith Park. And a mountain lion expert who visited Griffith Park last week, a week ago today, in fact, said the Los Angeles' largest urban oasis offers inviting habitat for the big cats. Walter Boyce, director of the UC Davis Wildlife Health Center, was flown in by city officials who wanted him to determine whether a lion seen several times in recent weeks in the park was a threat to public safety. Boyce's answer, probably not, because the lion has never been seen acting aggressively towards people who visit the park at the rate of $10 million a year. He also told officials with the city department Recreation and Parks that they must do a better job of informing visitors of precautions that should they should take in cougar country. Quote, you have food, water, and cover for the lions here, Boyce said. I wouldn't expect an area this size to support a lion over the long haul because it's too small, but the park has a reproducing population of deer, and that's what a lion wants. And it goes on from there. And at some point, I think we'll probably see if we could have Walter Boyce on the show. Because he does seem to be consulted here locally in Orange County and obviously now with Griffith Park and elsewhere about mountain lions and sort of just the encroaching. I'm not sure who's encroaching on whose territory, but that's a topic for another day. But since he works at UC Davis, my alma mater, for those keeping track at home, seems like it'd be a cool guest on a number of levels. So, all right, it's time now for our mid-animal news quiz. And it's simply a true-false question, and the first person who correctly answers it gets a prize. And we're not just talking any crummy prize here, folks. We are talking cool, cool stuff. Oh, let's see. What's an array of our currently available prizes? Well, we've got books and CDs, most of which are by previous guests on the show. One guest we haven't had on yet, but it's certainly a book that's a potential prize. It's Shirley MacLaine's latest book because it's co-written by her dog. So that's right up there. We also have, find it here, a copy of a brand new CD that the PETA folks have put out that's actually raises money and benefits PETA, but it's called Liberation, and a variety of bands, Goldfinger, Good Charlotte, The Used, Anti-Flag, Desperacitos, The Faint, and others all participate. So, if you like going for that kind of thing, you can get that from us if you're the lucky winner. We've got cat toys. We've got safety collars. We've got cool little pieces of jewelry like necklaces with neat charms of elephant or rattlesnake, dolphin, on and on. So, anyways, keep that in mind now and later when we get into Name That Animal Tune. These are the kind of prizes that await you if you're the fortunate enough to be the winner here. All right, so one question, true or false? First person that gets the correct answer called in at 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI gets their choice. Huh? Could anything be any simpler or cooler? All right, I don't think so. Here it is. The hummingbird is the only bird that can fly backward. True or false? 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI. And carrying on now with our animal news, a piece that came from Reuters, I believe. And it starts off, humanity's closest relative, the chimpanzee, could be extinct in around 50 years because it is hunted for meat and threatened by deforestation and disease, researchers said on Tuesday. Deforestation and disease threatens chimpanzees, researchers say. Only 8,000 remain of the most vulnerable chimpanzee subspecies, the pan troglodyte, filariosis, which is found predominantly in Nigeria, and it could be extinct in 2 decades, according to a study. The study is presented at a conference of the Pan-African Sanctuaries Alliance, PASA, in Johannesburg. PASA sanctuaries care for orphaned or injured great apes. Quotas believe that the illegal hunting and eating of apes, known as the bushmeat crisis, has had the greatest impact on the rate of decline, along with deforestation, human encroachment, and disease, PASA said in a statement. In a new quote, the situation is much more critical than we thought, said Norm Rosen, an anthropologist at California State University Fullerton, who coordinated the study. The study used the rate of orphans brought by people to sanctuaries to calculate the loss of chimpanzees in the wild and showed a dramatic increase in the number of baby chimps losing their parents. Rosen's study, which estimates that 10 chimpanzees in the wild are killed for every orphan that reaches a sanctuary, predicts that the Villarosa subspecies will become extinct in the next 17 to 23 years. Yikes. That is not good news. So let's move into something a little more upbeat, and then if we have more time, maybe we'll get into some other news items later, but we do want to get into the Comedy Corner, and then, of course, welcome our guest, Matilda Cagney, shortly. I want to tell you about the Animal Rescue Site, which we've mentioned a number of times on the show here before, but it's really cool. It's a website, and the address is the Animal Rescue Site, S-I-T-E, of course, .com. And when you go there, you can click on a section that says Feed an Animal in Need, and that's indeed what happens. It doesn't cost you a thing. There are corporate sponsors and advertisers who use the number of daily visits to donate food and or monies to help abandoned or neglected animals in exchange for that exposure. So I have not at this point heard about any catch or any downside to it. So it's the animalrescuesite.com. And the other cool thing is you can go every day and click on that, and it helps animals every day. So we like that, right? All right, so that's, I think, a little more upbeat, or at least potentially upbeat way to conclude, for the moment at least, this edition of the Animal News. So if there are ever any news stories or announcements, events you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@AOL.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us with any comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, and any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email again is talkinganimals@AOL.com. And I'm pleased to remind you, redundantly so, I'm sure, but about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check out the site at www.talkinganimals.net. And again, that's .net, folks. Make no mistake. And please sign up for the email list so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of just about all the shows. Like I said, we're a little behind at the moment, but we're going to correct that shortly. We also have assorted photographs and articles, all kinds of links, other audio pieces and more. So please stop by and take a look around the site. Again, it's talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which is always, of course, involves an animal-oriented piece of comedy. This is Bob Zaney. That's right, you heard me. Bob Zaney with the final portion of a piece called Dogs and Clowns on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
A lot of people ask me if Bob Zaney's my real name. I'll be honest, it isn't. My real name is Big Dick McGee. You gotta love a mom that names you Big Dick. That is a woman with a vision.
All right, well, thanks to our earlier technical glitch, we've got another one here, but that's okay. We roll with it, don't we? That's right. Let's try this.
I have 3 dogs. You pet people? 3 dogs, 3 cats. Let me give you a piece of advice. Don't get 2 different pets at the same time. Made a horrible mistake. Got a greyhound dog and a rabbit. Haven't seen either one of them ever since. And my wife loves the dogs. They get to do anything they want around the house. It's okay with her. I have limitations. No, the other day, little Norman, our dog, Norman, the best dog in the whole wide world, Norman runs into the living room with a turd in his mouth. She's laughing and laughing. Oh, when I do it, I'm sick and need help. And every time I take my dog, Norman, for a walk, he always sniffs this one pole in the neighborhood. You know what he's doing? Checking his pee mail. You got peed.
All right, that was Bob Zaney on today's Comedy Corner with a snippet of it called Dogs and Clowns, taken from his CD entitled Live in Las Vegas. The Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're already listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at www.kuci.org. Some of you do, no doubt, in fact, are listening that very way. As we speak, or as some of us speak and some of us listen. And some of you, perhaps, arrived there through our swell website, talkinganimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California, Board of Regents. And while we get today's guest, Matilda DeCagney, on the phone with us, this is as good a time as any to hear an animal tune. This is Dwight Lamb with Oyster Grill on Talk Animals here on KUCI. Okay, this is Dwight Lamb with a couple animals on tunes of sorts, really. It was Oyster Girl, and right now we're listening to Oyster River Quadrille. And earlier in the show, I mentioned this week's guest is Matilda DeCagney, an animal trainer who's worked with the Jack Russell Terriers, who played Eddie on the Emmy-winning sitcom Frasier, and many other projects, and many other animals, for that matter. So there's all kinds of things to talk about on these and other topics. So let's welcome Matilda DeCagney to Talking Animals. Matilda, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello, Duncan.
Hi, welcome to Talking Animals.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And of course, in announcing that you'd be our guest today, I've naturally mentioned the gifted actors who portrayed Eddie on Frasier, and I do want to delve into to your work with that father-son team and the unique challenges of life with Jack Russell Terriers. But first, I think it'd be useful to kind of start a little more at the beginning. How did you kind of first get into to animal training?
Well, I started as a volunteer, actually, for the company that I work for called Birds and Animals Unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
What it is we're an agency that provides animals for motion pictures, TVs, and commercials.
Right.
And there is numerous places like that around Los Angeles. And we pretty much have a compound and all kinds of animals, including chimpanzees, orangutan, and baboons, and all kinds of birds, and pigs, and cats, and dogs, and
lots
of domestic animals.
Yeah.
But I basically knocked on this gentleman's door, Gary Giroux. He's the owner of the company, and begged him to have me clean cages.
And that
was about 20 years ago.
Wow.
Eventually I walked my way up and went from, you know, cleaning to a little bit more and worked for free for a couple of months. And then Gary happened to also have the show that is owned by Universal Studio, the live animal show there.
Okay.
And I started to learn to do shows for Universal Studio And from there, I moved on to movies, and the rest is history.
And also, if I'm not mistaken, Matilda, didn't that company, I don't know if it's still true now, but didn't it start kind of in the Orange County area? I want to think that it was based here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
In Irvine, Lake Forest,
mm-hmm,
is the office, and one of the compound there is at Modjeska Canyon.
Oh, okay.
So, but the office is in Lake Forest.
Right, right.
And Gary is from there, and yeah.
And so what was your first job involving an animal actually on screen, or was it more the live performance for the Universal thing first?
No, one of my first jobs, I think, was commercial with dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go on my own for a long time. My very first movie was Tell Magnolia.
Oh, wow.
With Shirley MacLaine and Dolly Parton.
Sure, Julia Roberts.
And Julia Roberts,
That
was one of her first movies, too,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
She was not known yet. But and second movie was Back to the Future 2 and 3. But the very, very first jobs were probably some little commercials with my boss and... Just trying to help out and absorb as much as I could.
Yeah.
But I also got sent on a job by myself with a tarantula. And Gary had called and says, look, do you want to go, on Days of Our Lives to do a tarantula job? And, of course, I said yes. But, of course, I was extremely afraid of tarantula and spiders in general. So, I said, oh, not a problem. And so I went to go pick up the tarantula, the tarantula master, and he gave me the spider in a little plastic aquarium kind of box and or terrarium. And he said, it's not a problem, you know, you just can move them around with a wood spoon, and if they're warm, they're not going to move so much, so just... take out of the box with a slider there, and then you can just manage with a wood spoon. And I'm like, okay. And so I get there, and it's time to put the tarantula on the bed, and I go to move the tarantula and kind of get closer to it, and it made a squeaky noise like I was not expecting, and I just scream out loud.
Oh, my God.
And
I didn't know tarantulas could make that kind of noise.
No, me neither. They squeak when you wake them up.
Oh, really?
And just like you know, and I just screamed and threw the box, and I was so terrified. One of the grips there was ending up helping me out because I couldn't touch this thing. I was just
didn't really bargain for this exactly.
Well, so I thought I was never going to work in this town again, but I guess it worked out okay.
Yeah, yeah, apparently so. So, I mean, did it just kind of then, even with the slight misadventure with the tarantula, did it sort of just kind of gradually build so that you were just getting more more and more jobs, having, you know, started off and obviously paid
yes,
plenty of dues?
Yes, you know, the company was actually building up, and when I first started, we Gary Parley had, he used to have this little calendar, and he would write down, you know, on a calendar, a job on Tuesday and maybe one Friday, and that was pretty much, you know, the week.
Mm-hmm.
We had like two jobs, and like I said, I would try to go on as much as possible just to help. And but through the years, it's been now actually 18 years. We Gary has been so successful. He now has a compound in New York, Japan, England, Florida,
wow.
Los Angeles, of course, and there's no longer little calendar things. It's all, you know, on computers, and
sure.
And it's packed of jobs every day. There's three or four jobs, and of course we've done all the Disney movies, including Dr. Dolittle, 101, 102 Dalmatians, all the Harry Potters. Let's see, Snow Dogs, and then I got a chance to work on all kinds of feature films like As Good As It Gets.
Mm-hmm.
We had the dog on that.
Yeah.
Little Jill.
Yeah. Portraying Verdell. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was exciting.
Sure.
Homeward Bound. That was another Disney movie. And of course, I've been working on Frasier for.
Yeah, well, we definitely want to get into that in a moment. But let me ask, because obviously now this many years in, you've certainly, you know, obviously developed a reputation as one of the sort of premier trainers in the biz. What combination of traits really makes a great animal trainer for film or television or commercials, for that matter?
Well, I'll tell you right now, it's passion for your job, love
mm-hmm.
for the animals.
Mm-hmm.
those are the best traits. And it's not just about trait, but it's really about psychology and not knowing how to read an animal. So it really comes down to the communication you're having with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much so like a kid where... you can't communicate, you know, obviously you don't have the dialogue, so it's all about finding what's going to make them happy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about making training a fun game. So, of course, the treats, because, as you know, dogs love the treats and
sure.
all that.
Yeah.
They love toys, and it's fun to... but ultimately, you have animals that need that have to be happy working and needs to be fit for the job.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to build that into them, or teach them even what toys are and all that stuff.
Mm.
Some dogs I pick up, they're even afraid of squeaky toys. Most of them are, to start with. But as far as the food related thing, I use some Bill Jack liver treats.
Okay.
I think you can find just about anywhere.
Sure. And those are like when
they're healthy, and they're easy breakable into little pieces. So depending on the size of the dogs I work with, then I'll use some of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll often also cook some chicken, and because I like them to have lean food as well, and so I always have a pot of chicken breast cooking as well.
Nice. Hey, Matilda, looks like we might have a call or a call from one of our listeners. Would you be willing to take a call?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Hi, you're on live on KUCI with Matilda Cagney on the Talking Animals. Hello? Hello? Oh, all right. Well, maybe they'll call back. I thought we had them. But, in fact, let me remind our listeners that this is Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, and our guest is Matilda Cagney, animal trainer extraordinaire for film and television. And you can indeed get in on the conversation by calling us at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So, I guess we're hearing one of your friends and stars in the background there. But,
yeah.
but what, so I guess what are is the idea that really from it looks like, okay, maybe that is the, so we got at least one call. Hold on one sec, Matilda. I think we, hi, you're on live on KUCI with Matilda Kagi on Talking Animals.
Hi. This is interesting. I teach psychology, and I sometimes have students who are interested in getting into the area that you are into. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you have a phone or an email address where I could have students contact you?
They can, but I can tell you that the best way nowadays to get in this business is to go to a college called Moorpark College.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in Moorpark, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And they have great programs for animal trainers and zookeeping and animal behaviors and the whole spiel. So that's, nowadays, that's the directions that, that most of the new trainers take.
Now, is Moorpark in California?
Yes, it is. It's just a north of Thousand Oaks, so it's not far at all.
And is that a community college or a private college?
That's a good question. Yeah, I'm not sure about that myself, but
I'm not sure.
I want to say community college, but I wouldn't swear to it in court.
Okay, well, thank you. I did not know there were actually colleges or classes that taught this.
Yeah, and I think that would be the best.
That's
the best
beautiful
ways for them to find out a little bit more about it. And it is a 2 years program, and it's very well done, and it gives all kinds of exposure to all kinds of animals and, like I said, behavioral and things like that. But training is about psychology, and that's kind of the beauty of it. It's just it's all, you know, getting within their mind and understanding them.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it complex and interesting.
Really? Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for calling.
Yeah.
Bye-bye now. And Matilda, we actually have another call holding right now, so let's see what they have to say. Hi, you're on live on Talking Animals with Matilda Cagney.
Oh, hi there. I have a question. First of all, I enjoyed Enzo and Moose's work so much on Frasier.
Thank you.
You're obviously so gifted. Do you think cats can be trained, like house cats?
Oh, yes, they can. We do train a lot of our house cats. I don't think, however, pets house cats are. It is a little bit trickier to train a cat because of obviously what they are, and therefore you need to know a lot about training before you train your cat as a pet, because
I thought it'd probably be a little bit more complicated to train a cat than a dog.
It is. It's a lot more. So you need to know exactly kind of what you're doing and giving them the right directions. And not like the dogs, they must work a little bit more for food related.
I see.
And the clicker, that's the only way to work them with. Which is a sound reward instead of a voice reward. They don't. So it's all a little bit more complex than a dog.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And, again, I enjoy your work so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
And, Matilda, this is like a flurry. This is almost unprecedented in the annals of Talking Animals. We have another call holding. Do you want to take another one?
Oh, yes, of course.
Okay, great. Hi, you're on live on KUCI. It's Talking Animals with Matilda Cagney.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I was wondering, with all the films that you've worked on, it sounds like fascinating work, how do you cope with actors that are terrified of the animals that they have to work with? Who deals with the actors, do you or does somebody else? How does that work? Or do you have any experiences you could tell us about?
Sure. I sure can. As a matter of fact, interestingly enough, you're probably not going to believe it, but Eddie Murphy on Dr. Dolittle was absolutely terrified of every single animal we brought up on the
Really?
Show. Yes.
Wow.
Can you believe it?
No, like you say, that is surprising. Yeah.
To the point that we had to do split screens, which means he actually was never, hardly ever in on the set with any of the animals. We just shot the animals and then shot him and shot the animals and then shot him.
And just cut it together then, kind of, so it looked like he was...
And then put it together in the post-production. It is very... it's very rare that actors are afraid of animals the way he was.
Oh.
And usually, you know, people are really... If anything, they're indifferent. But it makes it a lot more complicated and hard to work, because what I like to do is, you know, have the animals totally take on to the actor. And I spend a lot of time prepping them together and encouraging them to be together and to work as a team, so I can fade away and they let them kind of work their chemistries. But when it doesn't happen that way, we either do split screen like we did on Dr. Dolittle, or what we do is we use the stand-in of the actor, and we rehearse and we do all the work with that person, and then hopefully the actor comes in and he doesn't know too much. We try to not let him interact with the animal as much, because the animal feeds from it. They know exactly. But that, I have another funny story, which was I happened to work with Woody Allen on Picking Up the Pieces, and he has never worked with animals and nor wanted to, and hate them, literally. And that's what he told me. He said, you know, I got to be honest with you, I hate animals, even goldfish, he said. And I have this little fox terrier that was just adorable. And he said, there is no way that I'm going to feed or touch your dog. And ideally, in order to make the animal relate to this new person, we have them feed him a little bit, you know, and just... So since he didn't want to touch it, I had to make some kind of a little pen with a handle with it. And so I would put the food in a tin pan, and he would feed the dog like that. And he got to be so impressed by the training and by what we could accomplish with the dog and stuff that he actually congratulated us on working with him. And he was very generous about being nice and interesting by the whole process. So I guess you customize your techniques to the actors.
Yeah, that sounds like it almost, just that process could almost be a scene in a Woody Allen film. It just sounds so improbable, you know. Just,
it was like, yeah, it was amazing. But it was nice to see him turn around.
Yeah.
And just actually being fascinated by the training itself and by watching the animal clicking. And he would stay on the set when he wasn't even working the animals. And just because if I had very hard scene, and it was a hard show, it never did anything. It went practically straight to video, but he stayed for some of the hardest scenes where the dog had like 6, 7, 8 moves to do in one shot. So just because he was a lot more interested than what he saw originally, and just an adorable person.
Wow, that's cool.
So you do customize, and you do, there is actors that they're too much, they're too overzealous with them. And that's not good neither, because you need to have some kind of a, you know, control and rules, and they have to, they can't be, you know, completely crazy out there. So some actors you have to ask them to be somewhat professional and to act with them like they will do with a human actor, and respect my work as well. I have to lay some grounds with some other actors. And then you have the type of the Mel Gibson and Kevin Costner like that are like just the best. They love animals and they totally respect you and appreciate your work.
And make it easy probably to carry out what you're trying to do.
Yes, extremely.
Thank you so much then for taking my call. It's been a great show. Thanks
for calling.
Okay.
So Mathilde, another thing that, you know, in addition to obviously being sort of tops in your field that I was really interested in when I heard this about you, is that it seems like, from what I gather, you really seem to place a premium on, whenever possible, at least finding and working with rescue animals.
Oh, yes.
And how does that work? I mean, do you fall for an animal at a shelter the way the rest of us animal lovers do, or and then just go about seeing, hey, maybe he or she could have a showbiz career, or do you look for a certain kind of breed or a certain kind of look, or how does that work?
No, I just pretty much, I used to, now I go a little bit, I use the internet a little bit more, but I used to just go to shelters one after another and look, and... some dogs, I have to say, didn't quite work out, but I always found a home for them.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them have. I'm an animal lover, and I do anything to help them out.
Sure.
And Moose and I have worked for the years to do a lot of charities and raise money and all that for shelters. So basically, what I do is I just look for a dog that's outgoing, tail wagging. If anything, more on the hyper crazy side is good. You know, the dogs that a lot of people can't handle because they're too much of a handful. I like that. I like dogs that are extremely crazy.
Oh yeah. Well, maybe that provides a natural segue into when and how you first started working with Jack Russell Terriers, because from what I gather, that's part of the description of Moose and Enzo and others, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like, but again, if I would have known, I would have probably not gone that route.
Yeah.
Moose was a little bit of a Moose was an adopted dog that had several homes before I and got rejected because of too much mischievous and hyperness. And,
yeah, he sounded like a one-dog wrecking crew, some of the stuff I'd read about him. I mean, before you got him, I mean, it sounded like he really, literally, like, tore up places and started fires.
Yeah, yeah.
And all
kinds of places and animals and his teeth and anything you can think of, he would, you know, try to escape and bite. And he was really, really a troublemaker kind of dog.
Yeah.
And he was a true challenge for me. But yet I've learned so much from him, and that's a nice thing. And that's what I realized is by not having having an unusual dog, then obviously you learn a lot from that. And so Moose, basically, if he wouldn't have been in the hand of probably me and me alone, he would have never made it. Not as a pet, for sure, no way. Just too much. Nobody has that kind of patience to put up with.
Yeah.
And even in the movie industry and all that, a lot of people had told me, you know, he's just not a good dog. Get rid of him. Get rid of him. And I didn't, because I was kind of interested by this stubbornness of mischievous behaviors that he was giving me. And I kind of decided to take on the challenge, and boy, did I hit the jackpot with him.
I'll say, and again, I think I made this clear earlier in the show, but in case I didn't, Moose, of course, is the Jack Russell Terrier who for most of Frasier played Eddie, and then his son Enzo, if I understand things correctly, sort of filled in more and more kind of as in the later seasons. Is that right?
Towards the end, because obviously Moose was becoming retired.
Yeah.
I just always, you know, need to have a backup dog too.
Sure.
So,
What would you say?
But also, you know, I didn't know anything about Jack Russell, never had one before. And I also realized that the breed is, he was the worst of the breed, but the breed is that way, and they're just not easy dogs. And I really pledge for whomever that's gonna decide to get one to make sure they know and that they have the right lifestyle for those dogs, because if you're not an outdoor exercise kind of person that has a lot of time for them, then disregard, because they will make your life miserable and they will be miserable as well. So.
Yeah, I think that's really an important point, that for anybody who might have, you know, sort of found themselves enchanted by the cuteness of you know, Eddie or other dogs, my dog Skip, you know, whatever, that Jack Russell Terriers really, as what you're saying, are really, like, high-strung, need to do a lot of work, need to be kind of on the go and on the move. And some people, that's great. But for some people who think, hey, we're just getting a cute dog like the dog on Frasier, it's a whole different ballgame. Right?
Yeah, they can't live in an apartment neither. I mean, you're much better off getting a Great Dane than a Jack Russell if you're going to do that.
Yeah.
And I really mean it, actually, because they're a lot calmer than the Jack Russell.
Sure. Well, Matilda, we're just sort of nearing the end of our time. How many Jack Russell Terriers and or other animals live with you currently?
Well,
or can you not
do
say?
A head count here.
Okay, all right.
I have about six dogs right now. I usually have about six dogs.
Yeah.
Moose is retired. He's at home. He's 15. And I have, of course, Enzo. He's nine. And I'm working some new dogs for a movie called Shaggy Dog.
That's the next project? That's the newest?
That's the next project.
Yeah,
and I have Sam and Scrapper from Dr. Dolittle. They're looking at me right now.
And is there a maximum number, not counting whatever supposed legal restrictions there may be, which we don't necessarily care about too much, but is there, in your view, a maximum number of animals you think should live with you, especially like if we're talking about moose or someone who needs a certain amount of attention, but any animal obviously needs a certain amount of attention. And, you know, as I understand it, you know, you also have another, you know, family life and other things. I mean, is there a certain limit where you just think, you know what, as much as I would love to have this one as well, I just can't.
Yes, unfortunately. I have to put limits to. And I'm really, I live in Venice area, and I'm so attached to being by the beach and all my friends and everything. I've been here all my American life. Some days I wish I would, you know, live somewhere else. I could have more. But the fact is, to tell you the truth, you can have acres and acres of land.
Mm-hmm.
What the dog wants to do and be is with you.
Yeah.
And ultimately, they'll be really happy. They'll go run around for half an hour, but they're going to be at your door and going, okay, now what, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I keep reminding me that I better have a little less.
Yeah.
And really take good care of them and get them, you know, into training and doing things and occupied, because ultimately that's really what they want. And also, having them here, they all go to Mucha's, his private dog walker that comes every day and takes care of him.
Mm.
But everybody else goes to work with me.
Oh, wow.
In everywhere I go, I have a big Dodge Ram that holds quite a bit of space, and all the dogs hop in the truck and off we go.
So even if some of those dogs aren't working that day, they just still just go with you because it's an outing and because everybody can be together that way,
Also, I like to train them. And on Fraser, I used to have a trailer. I'm usually in project work. I have a trailer and I have places that they can go to. It's kind of a ranch for them. So, and all my good old dogs, people are just so happy to, they're in the office, and I usually, like on Fraser, for instance, David Hyper's office is, his assistant will always have GL Verdell in her office.
Mm.
So I go drop her off there, and she will take care of her, and Kelsey's office, his assistant always had a dog too. And,
wow.
So
it was pretty fun environment for all dogs.
Yes. They've been so generous with everything and loving it. We used to call it the Westminster Dog Show because it was the one. I have German Shepherds and, you know, and so you'll see a dog, a Jack Russell, a German Shepherd, and they will move on in the mutt and this and that. And but everybody was so excited to have them around, and their dogs that are either in training, which in that case I thoroughly take care of them, or they have been trained, in which in that case they're very well behaved to go into somebody's office or be with somebody else and just hang for the day.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Matilde, we're just about out of time, but gosh, and there's so many other things I actually was hoping to get into, but it's been really fascinating.
We can do it again.
Yeah, well, I would love that. That's so so nice of you, and thank you again for joining us on Talking Animals, and good luck, I guess, at the moment on the latest
Shaggy Dog
project and anything else. So thank you so much for joining us today. Okay, take
Have
care.
Have a great day.
All right, you too. Thank you so much. Okay, that was Matilde Cagney joining us today on Talking Animals, and we want to thank her again for that. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI and Irvine 88.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at kuci.org. Now it's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. Again, this is pretty much like any version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except that in this game, The tunes are always animal-related, so I'll play a snippet of this tune. We're already hearing it, and there'll be a prize. That's right. I mentioned all the prizes earlier for the first caller who correctly identifies this animal tune, or animals tune, you can almost say in this case. So as soon as you recognize it, call in 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. All right, can anyone name that animal tune? Jeff Scott did. He's coming up shortly with the blues disease. I don't know if that's quite fair. It's a little too in-house. Anyway, I'm Duncan Strauss. We've just about reached the end of our this week's edition of Talking Animals. And I want to remind you the views and opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. I want to thank again our guest, Matilda Cagney. And maybe we'll have her on again, because there's so many other things I was really hoping to get into. But it was really fun and fascinating, and I want to thank all those for listening, and, of course, all those for calling in as well. So I hope you'll join us next week on Talking Animals, when our tentatively scheduled guest will be Tanya Petrovna, the chef, executive officer, that's right, of Native Foods California Vegan Restaurants, who will talk with us about veggie cooking and actually prepare a few dishes in studio if it all goes according to plan. So we hope you'll join us for that on Talking Animals next week, Monday, June 21st. I'm running desperately behind, so I will skip over a lot of my other rigmarole. And I just ask you to please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease, his great, great blues show here on KUCI. This has been Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And we'll see you, catch you next week on Talking Animals.